welcome to Keeping It Real, the Gorham Homestead podcast, where we talk about real food, real natural living, the real art of natural healing, and real life out here on our Tennessee homestead. I'm your host, Dawn Gorham, and today is Tuesday, January the 16th, 2024, and you're listening to episode number 5. Our topic today is just going to be the family milk cow. We are in the middle of Snowmageddon 2024. We got about, between 6 and 8 inches of snow here. And my husband and I have divided up the chores, and he's dealing with, you know, keeping the wood stove filled and bringing in wood and dealing with the lower barn, what we call the lower barnyard. And that's where the chickens and the ducks and the livestock guardian dogs and the goat, they all live down there. And so he is maintaining all of that for me. And my primary focus has been on my cows, my milk cows, milking, making sure that they are plenty of water, and he put out hay, but I'm checking it, just making sure everybody's doing good, making sure we're not having, you know, any frostbite issues on our teats or anything like that. And so that has been at the forefront of my mind. So I thought today would be a really good day to talk about, you know, keeping that family milk cow, for anybody that might be interested in that. And I'll just tell you my history. I've had milk cows now since April of 2021. Let me get a drink of coffee. April of 2021, and brought home my first cow. And I hand milked her for about the first year. And I will say that pretty quickly after I got her, I got a calf. I went and just found a calf, which is now Scarlet. And I'll tell you why I did that here in just a minute. But now we have 3 cows that I'm milking every single morning. I have Tara, Scarlet, and Prissy. And I have 1 18-month-old Jersey Angus cross that we are breeding right now. Hopefully she will calve next year. And then we have 1 6-month-old heifer, full-blooded Jersey, with super good genetics. She's the first one that has been born from Alvin, which is the Jersey bull that semen that we use. And he was all of the genetics that we are hoping for. So we're going to keep, in our breeding program, just keep trying to get better, you know, with every generation of cows that we're getting. So I just want to put this out there before we get started, that everything I'm going to say today and give you today information, this is my personal opinion. I am not a milk cow expert, and there are many, many ways to keep a family milk cow, and this is just what works for me and my family. You know, if it might not work for you and vice versa, what things that you do might not work for me. You know, a lot of it depends on geographical location, your particular situation, your family life, all of that stuff. So just take this with a grain of salt. This is, again, just what I do. So if it can help you in a little bit, in a way, give you some ideas, maybe there's something that I say will, you know, spark a little interest in you. And, you know, my hope is that eventually that is staple as chickens are. I think everybody should have chickens and a milk cow. So that's what I hope. I'll just start with telling you why we decided to get a family milk cow. And this in and of itself is a little controversial, really controversial. Raw milk. We are a raw milk family. And after doing my own personal research and talking to natural doctors and other people who were drinking raw milk, we just decided that's how the route that we wanted to go. And we have been a raw milk family for many, 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 many years now. And the health benefits and the difference that I have seen it make in our family is what made me want my own cow. So there's that. You have to make that part. That's a personal choice. You know, if you decide that you want to pasteurize milk, there's ways of doing that. Even if you have your own family milk cow, you can buy pasteurization equipment. If that's what you decide is best for you and your family, you can totally do that. One of the things that I hear the old timers say, like, if you bring up to, and I don't mean old timers in a derogatory way. I love me some old timers. They're my favorite people to talk to. But when you bring up milk cows to an old timer, they will cringe, like, right off the bat. Just, ooh. You know, they remember those days, the 7 days a week, 365, twice a day milkings. There was no breaks. There was no vacations. There was no nothing. I mean, when you had milk cows, you either had another family that you shared that milk cow with, or you did it every day, twice a day. There was no getting out of it. Well, one of the ways, you know, in modern times that we have found to minimize that and make life easier and more having a milk cow more enjoyable is what we call calf sharing. Now, calf sharing is just where you leave the cow, the mama cow, with the calf for 12 hours and you separate them for 12 hours. It's literally simple as that. The way that I do it, you know, you can flip-flop it. You can either do separation at night or separation during the day. I prefer separation at night because I feel like personally with me, my cows don't protest as much. And I don't mind the morning milking because I'm a morning person. I prefer to eat the frog, get it done, and then go on about my day. So after supper at night, if I'm milking the next morning, which I am now for sure, but if you want to milk the next morning, you would separate and just put the calf or the cow in a holding pen, whichever one you want to put up. I found it's easier for me to put the mama cow in the holding pen because the mama cow is trained. The little calves are harder to catch and put them in a holding pen. Just saying. So, but you know, you want to have them to where they can see each other. And then in the morning, you will bring the cow in to milk her. And then once you're done, you just turn them back out together in the pasture and they spend their day together and everybody's happy. So that is, that's how we do it. And if you're going to go on a vacation or a weekend trip, all you have to do is just not separate the cows. The calf will totally do the work for you. And that's one way, like, or you just don't feel like milking or you're sick or whatever. You just, instead of separating them at night, you just leave them together 24/7 and that's it. That can go on indefinitely till they're ready to wean. The other thing that you can do to help with, you know, vacations and whatever, if you have engagements or work or whatever, you can time your breeding so that it coincides with a vacation. So, for instance, there is a 2-month window before your cow is due to calve that's called the dry period. And you're supposed to dry her off and let her body rest for those 2 months so that she can put on some body condition and can get ready to make colostrum for the new calf that's being born. You can time your vacations during that 2-month dry period and have them calve when you get back from vacation. The other thing that you can do is once your cow has calved and your calf is, I don't know, say 2 to 3 months old, at least 2 months, but preferably 3 months, they're old enough and big enough by that time that they can take all the milk. So if you want to say, if you calve in March and you want to take a June vacation, well, your calf is April, May, June, your calf is 3 months old, you just don't separate them. And the calf will take all the milk and you don't have to do any work and you come back and everything's great. Now, we'll say you still need a farm sitter. You still need somebody to just come and check things, make sure the cows are fine, make sure the water's good. And, you know, if it's in the summer, then they have pasture and you don't have to worry about that. But, you know, you can also put a float valve on your water tank if you don't have a pond. And, but just, you know, you still need somebody to come put eyes on it just to make sure that it hasn't busted and there's not water going everywhere and that sort of thing. But it's really easy to get somebody to come and look and make sure everything's kosher it's a little harder to find somebody to come and do all the work. So that being said, you know, that's one way that that you can get around that 24/7, 365 commitment that is a lot of people's objection to having a family milk cow. Next thing is bulls or AI. So once your cow has calved, about 8 weeks after that, not the first heat cycle, but the second heat cycle, you want to breed your cow back. And the reason for that, especially if you want them to calve at about the same time that they did this year. So you start, you know, having to really think about that because a lot of this is timing stuff. And so if you have someone that can come and do AI for you, then it's a lot easier to make that schedule and it's a lot easier to time things. And, you know, a lot of people, if they miss that first, you know, if they miss their breeding window, they just don't breed back until the next year. And to me, AI costs money. Obviously, it costs to have your person come and do things, and you have to buy straws, semen straws, and, you know, pay for storage and all that kind of stuff. But it's a whole lot more cost effective, typically, especially if you have an easy breeding cow, to do that than it is to keep a bull and feed a bull. And keeping in mind that if you don't have a whole lot of pasture, that's extra, extra pressure that's getting put on your pasture because those boys are big. It's not like just your steer. I mean, they're really out there putting a lot of weight and a lot of grazing on that pasture. But the benefit, I will say, of excuse me, having a bull is also what we call live cover, is that your chances of your breeding actually taking are a whole lot higher. Sometimes using artificial insemination, those statistically speaking, it's not as good as having a bull. But we are a dairy, and dairy bulls are historically known to be the meanest, most aggressive creatures out there as far as farm animals go, and they've killed a lot of people. So dairy bulls are not even an option for my farm. I am not seasoned enough with farm animals or with cows to feel comfortable even adding an Angus bull, much less a dairy bull. It's just a danger that, you know, you have to weigh that. Do you want to take that risk? Do you not want to take that risk? But for me, it's just not worth it. So I have actually signed up to take the Select Sires artificial insemination training this spring. I'm very excited about doing that because I love my AI guy, but he's an hour away and the world doesn't revolve around me as much as I would love for it to. And sometimes he has other stuff going on. And my timing, being a small dairy like I am, my timing is everything. So if I can't get him to come when I need him, then I need to be able to handle things for myself. Plus, you know, God forbid something were to happen or he not be able to do it anymore, it's something I need to know how to do because there is nobody else. I don't know of anybody else in our area that does AI except our one guy that handles me and my friend Stephanie and, you know, all of the little farms, you know, that are the little micro dairies, the ones of us that have, you know, less than 20 cows, he handles all of those. And so it's really, really, really important for me that I learn how to do that. So that's what I'm doing. I'm excited to get that marked off my to-do list for this year. And it's just another skill that I will have in my toolbox to have and keep in my back pocket if necessary. So once you do get them bred, then you have to find out if it took, because that's really important. You can't just assume that it took, because mine hasn't taken after four times in a row. So there is this one pregnancy test that you can buy, and they make it for sheep, they make it for goats, they make it for cows, they make it for pigs, they make it for all kinds of stuff, but it's called the P test. Horses, they make it for that too. And it's from MLab Genetics, and you literally just stimulate the cow, they pee in a cup, and then you use that urine and you put it into this little vial of powder, and if, you know, once the liquid hits it, if it turns color, they're pregnant. If it stays this lime yellow or whatever, this little pale yellow color, then it's negative. Problem with that is, and it's pretty accurate, I will say that, as long as you've kept it at the right temperature and all that kind of stuff. But you have to wait 60 days post-breeding before you can do it. That's 2 months. And that's 2 months. Sometimes you can't afford to wait. So at 30 days, you can do a blood test and get that sent off. Problem with that is it's a blood draw. So either you have to learn how to do that and send it off to a place like Central Star, or get your vet to come do it, or your vet tech can do it. But again, that's something you got to bring somebody in to do. So that's something that probably you should learn how to do, and I'm going to learn how to do. Or you can do what's called palpation, which most vet techs and AI people know how to palpate. I believe that's a 60-day as well. They can go in and feel the cervix, and they can tell whether or not a cow is bred or open. So that's the only, and of course then your you know, people like your vet, like our awesome little vet, has an ultrasound that he carries around with him, and he can just go right on in there and see if there's a baby in there or not. So then that's pretty foolproof. Once your cow gets to, I don't know, at least 3 months, but the average is about 6 months, and typically no more than 9 months, you want to start thinking about weaning. And the reason is because as the cow gets older, they start, they can do damage to the teats, and they start, you know, leaving little bite marks, and, you know, and the older they get, the harder they are to wean. They're stubborn. Those little Jersey babies are stubborn. And the mamas are stubborn. They will take all kinds of abuse so that they can keep nursing their babies. But you got to get it done. But the cool thing about that is say, for instance, if you breed, or if you decide to wean your cow at 6 months and you want to go get another cow, a littler one, a smaller one, to graft onto your Jersey mama, you can go get a beef cow. So say you need, you don't have beef cows on your property, but you'd like to keep freezer beef going for, you know, your family, which is what we do. It's what we, you know, we don't have a beef cow herd per se, but we always, in one way or another, have a beef animal in the hopper that will eventually go to the processor and eventually feed our family. So you can get a bottle calf, a little bottle Angus. Sometimes you can find those at auction. Sometimes you can just find a local farmer who has too many heifers or too many little steers. And you just get your little bottle fella or bottle gal and graft her onto your Jersey cow. And Jersey mamas will take any calf, pretty much. Now, I'm sure there's exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, Jersey mamas don't mind. They just love all babies. Just come on, I'll feed you. You know, we'll be buddies, and they will, you know, nurse them until you separate them. And so if you want to continue to calf share and your first calf is too old or too big, that's another way you can do that. Just go get you another little bottle calf or two or three. Because sometimes, you know, depending on how much milk Jersey mama makes, if she's a big high producer, sometimes they can support two or three little bottle calves. And you can feed those out until they're old enough to, you know, old enough to process. So there's that little tip of what you can do. The way that we wean is by using weaning rings. And you can also separate if you have a way, if you have a weaning pen or a weaning pasture where you can just separate cows that you need to wean. But we don't, so we have to use rings. And that's just a little plastic. I don't know if I've already talked about this or not. But if I have, I'm sorry. But I'm going to tell you again. It's a little plastic ring that goes in their nose. And if it's pointed up, then it pokes the mama, and the mama will kick them off. If it's pointing down, it corrects the calf, and the calves don't like being pokey-pokied. So they will, you know, after a little while, they'll kind of give up. And most of the time, sometimes they outsmart it. But most of the time, those weaning rings work. A lot of people say that they only have to leave them on for about 2 weeks. I have not had any luck leaving them on 2 weeks. Well, if I do that, they go right back to it. So my rule of thumb is at least 6 weeks, if not 8. And so that's kind of where we are on that. Equipment, if you decide to get into milk cows, you know, really all you have is a milk crate to sit on and a bucket to milk in. That's it. That's all you got to have. That's to start out, though. And, but if you decide to get into, you know, buying a milking machine, a milker, you know, do your research. There's different kinds of milkers. I really like the one that I have. It's from Midi Supply, and it's called the Molasti. It's a single cow surge milker, and it has an 8-gallon bucket. So I am able to milk all 3 cows into 1 bucket and then bring that in and process it, or I can do them individually. And sometimes I will do that. Like, I like to test sometimes, you know, once a week or, you know, every 2 weeks, just to kind of see, make sure we don't have any bacteria in the milk. Just make sure it's drained. Each one is draining, you know, quickly like it's supposed to, not super slow. And then I like to see how much each one of them are producing. Like, I like to know who's at 1 gallon, over 1 gallon. And that's really all I get from my cows at this point is about 1 gallon each, 1 gallon to 1.5 gallons. And I like to see how much cream, what cream line each cow is producing. So, you know, it's good with that particular machine. You can do it either way. You just have to, you know, you just have to clean it really good when you're done with it, you know, no matter what you do. And you have to have, and this is, some people use iodine, some people don't. I do. I like to clean with iodine before and after. Because, you know, early on we had that issue with mastitis, and I just feel like the iodine helps close the end of that teat over and keeps any bacteria from getting up in there, and then it air dries. And for me, it's just, that's one of those things that I don't skip. I believe that it helps. So we do it. And if a stanchion, sometimes you can find a cow that'll be willing to just stand there for you in the field, which Tara did. She would let me milk her anywhere. It didn't matter. Thunder, lightning, out in the middle of the field, up next to my house, on the porch, in the driveway. She didn't care. And so for the longest time, I didn't have a stanchion with her. I just tied her little halter to a post and, you know, here we went. But once we had Scarlet ready to milk, we built a stanchion because Scarlet would not let me even touch her udder without trying to kick me. So I knew that we were going to have to use a kick bar, and I knew she was going to have to be restrained. So we did. We built 1 milking stanchion is all I have, and each cow individually comes into that milking stanchion, you know, eats their little ration, does their thing, and then they go back out in the pasture. So we are not super good at building stuff. And building that stanchion was fairly easy, so I do recommend it. And plus, my vet was really happy, and my vet tech with my AI guy, because they didn't love dancing all over the... While Tara would stand still for me to milk her, she would not stand still for the vet or the AI guy. They danced all over the place with her. So I know that they're both really, really happy now that I have a way to restrain them, and they will appreciate that. As far as feed goes, we are 100%, well, I shouldn't say 100%. We are 99.999% grass-fed. We give them pasture and hay, but at milking time, they get a ration of a little bit of milk cow grain that is organic, non-GMO, mixed in with black oil sunflower seeds, alfalfa, and oats. And sometimes I will throw in a little bit of diatomaceous earth just in case we are dealing with any parasites. And I will pour a little bit of apple cider vinegar on it, and I top dress it with a sprinkle, like you would sprinkle salt, of kelp on top of their food, because I really feel like that gives them a good round mixture of things that I feel like their body needs to hold condition. So we don't do a ton of grain, and that is only in the morning. They don't get it in the evening. They don't get it throughout the day. And it's literally one scoop of grain, with the rest of it being, you know, the other stuff that's really good for them. Because they don't like it unless I put the grain in there. They will, like, take their nose and go back and forth, and they just won't eat it. So there's that. And we have to have minerals, obviously. All cows, including milk cows, require salt and other minerals. We use blocks because that's what we have, that's what we're able to do. I don't have containers yet that can hold the Free Choice loose minerals. I hope that eventually I will have that. But at this time, you know, what we're doing is the blocks. So that's what they're getting for that. You know, there are some potential illnesses that you have to watch out for with milk cows, and one of those is mastitis. We did have an issue with that early on, and ketosis and milk fever. Those are three that milk cows can be super prone to. And typically with milk fever, that ends up being, or normally is, a cow that is older and a very high producer. Those are your ones that tend to be prone to milk fever. And the ketosis can happen, it's my understanding, at any time, but it's more likely to happen either right before or right after calving. And typically the solution for that is we keep a gallon of propylene glycol and some molasses on hand so that if we need to either, you know, put it in their feed or get them to drink it or whatever we need to do. So we always have that on hand. And we have CMPK on hand for milk fever if that happens. And that's just where, you know, their body is making so much milk. It uses all the calcium, and calcium gets into their, it's my understanding, calcium is robbed from their bones and gets into their bloodstream and can cause an imbalance that can be deadly. So, or maybe it's, they have less of it. I can't remember because I think the CMPK, that level, I do know that levels it out somehow. So you can give them, if you know your cow is prone to milk fever, you can give them CMPK when they go into labor, and then pretty much that will normally ward that off and help them to not go down from that. If you're going to choose a milk cow, and you're going out and looking for one, don't go looking for the unicorn, especially if it's your first cow, because you're going to spend way too much money. And number two, you may overlook a cow that would otherwise be a really, really good cow because you're just looking for perfection. For instance, you know, you may run across a cow that has three working quarters and, you know, one that got mastitis and it's not a working quarter anymore. We have that with Tara, and that was totally my fault. But she makes up for it. What she lost in that one quarter, you know, her production did not go down at all. She still makes the same amount of milk that she made before we lost that quarter. And it's because, you know, they will make up for it and send that milk to the other three quarters. So, And plus, if, you know, if you're a family milk cow, you're not looking for 5 or 6 gallons a day anyway. So, and that's that's really the only downside to that is sometimes it can be, you know, less production. But we're not looking, especially if we're doing grass-fed backyard milk cow, we're not looking to push these cows to their, you know, maximum production anyway. We're just looking to get our milk, keep them healthy, keep them, you know, on pasture. And so that's really not that big of a deal. The other thing is I would recommend, though, getting a cow that is in milk at the time and bred back, especially if it's if you're new to it, because that's two less things that you have to worry about is calving and getting them bred back. So get you a cow that's in milk, learn how to milk her, learn how to deal with that milk, learn, you know, how to process the milk and all of that kind of stuff. And then by the time that she's ready to calve, hopefully at least 3 or 4 months later, you've already got part of it under your belt, and then you're learning calving. Because learning calving is a whole new thing. And then 2 months after that, you're learning about the breeding process. So don't get, and she's already trained, so you're not having to learn that. Because training, I love training milk cows, but it can be hairy at times. Like I've got the pee water knocked out of me by Scarlett several times. And Prissy has tried to kick me. And so it's not, you know, it's not all fun and games. Getting, there's something to be said for a first time cow owner buying a cow that's already very, very gentle, will stand for milking, doesn't mind you touching her, all of that stuff. So if you're going to look for anything, that's what I would look for. Now you can decide whether or not, you want to do disease testing. If it's your first cow, there are, this is controversial as well, because there are some diseases that are worse than others. Some, the school of thought is that it is not a concern. And then you ask another person and they will tell you that they absolutely will not have a cow, you know, with that particular disease. So, you know, that's something that you have to research on your own. I'll tell you what some of them are, though, that you, if you decide to test, that what they are is brucellosis. Here in Tennessee, we're a brucellosis-free state, so we do not really have to worry about that. So I don't test for it. TB, tuberculosis. Of course, that's not something anybody would want their cows to have. So that's something that I would recommend. You know, that's just me, but that's, you know, one thing that I will test for. Yonis, that's something that we test for because that's not something that we want here at all. And the reason for that is yonis is very, 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 very contagious. And once you have one cow with yonis, you cannot have cows back on that pasture, I believe, for at least a year, if not longer, because they can pick it right back up from the soil. And it can be very, very devastating for a cow to watch a cow go down with yonis. And drinking the milk from a yonis cow, is my understanding, can cause Crohn's. That's not proven. So that's not something that we don't worry about it for that reason. We worry about it because we don't want a cow to get emaciated and go down with it and then have to cleanse our pasture and not have cows on it for a year. BVD is another one, bovine diarrhea, I think, or diarrheo, however they pronounce that or spell it. And then BLV, which is bovine leukemia. This is another one, highly controversial. Most people will say it is not transmissible to humans. We 100% know that. There is some link out there that claims that BLV in cows, if you drink the milk raw, can cause breast cancer. I don't buy that either. And so we don't worry about BLV. We actually have a BLV cow that was positive on the ELISA test, which is just the sensitivity test. It can kind of see if they've had antibodies for it ever. But she was negative on the PCR test, which means she does not have an active infection at all. So it's not something like if I had known that she had it, I probably wouldn't have picked her. But it's not something that I will cull for. We are trying to get it out of our herd. We don't want, as far as I know, none of the other cows have it. We are testing everybody again here in the next, you know, this month, just because we are a herd share and we do have members and we do have people, you know, buying our milk and stuff. So, you know, we want to test for the other things for sure. But since we're testing, we're going to go ahead and test for everything. But the goal is, you know, the goal is to eventually have a completely disease-free, perfect A2 polled genetics, grass-fed cows that, you know, live perfectly and grow little unicorn horns. That's what, you know, that's what we hope for eventually. But that's not always attainable for somebody right off the bat. So just kind of keep that in mind and take that with a grain of salt. That, you know, it's not always perfection. And I certainly don't believe that that a person should try to check every single box to make sure that that cow is perfect before you bring home your cow. Just bring home your cow. That's what I did. And, you know, and you can always continue like we're doing, you know, to just try to get better with time. Continue to breed, you know, to stack on those good genetics. Try to weed out the bad genetics. And Tara's going to be retired after this year, especially since she's so hard to breed back. And so, and now that we have other cows coming up, replacement heifers and things that are going to be, you know, going to take her place. But as long as I did not have a replacement for her, I would not cull her for that. So, there's some testing, I guess, since we're talking about disease testings, I'll tell you, we're using Central Star. And what they do is they send you a little box that has a kit and it has different purple top vials on it. And the purple top is for blood samples, you know, that are testing for more than one thing, I suppose. But you just get your blood drawn and you label each vial and you send it back to them. And then, you know, in a couple of days or a week, however long it takes, depending on how busy they are, they'll upload your results to your account and you just log in and you see your account. So Central Star is a really, really good place. And they can check your cows for their A2 status, their other genetic stuff, like their, I'm trying to think. I know there's more stuff. They can do a pregnancy test. They can do diseases, their A2 status, and I think some other protein, but I'm not 100% positive. But anyway, it's super affordable to do it that way. So much cheaper than using a vet. So, you know, if that's what you want to do, then that's a great place to do that. We're growing, and I hope to continue to grow, especially now that I have a farm sitter that I trust and I love. We call her Honey Bear, because her high school mascot was the Honey Bear, so we call her Honey Bear. But, you know, there was one point where I was thinking I was just going to get out of selling to people altogether because I couldn't do anything or go anywhere. But since she has come along, she has made my life so much easier and given me so much peace of mind that I'm back to the school of thought now that I think I want to grow the micro dairy. And if she's cool with that, if she's cool with me having more cows, then definitely want to do that. But once we do that, that means that I want a milking parlor. I want something besides my back porch because it was eight degrees this morning and I about froze my little toes off. So a milking parlor is on the horizon for me with heat, concrete floor, a drain where I can just spray it and spray everything out, have hot water where I can wash my jars and wash my machine. And I want to have the milk plan chill tank so that I don't have to worry about putting my milk in the freezer for an hour and letting it chill really fast and then forgetting it and coming back to frozen milk. Because that seems to happen to me a lot. So if I had the milk plan chill tank, then you just, your milk goes right into the milk plan and it chills it and you don't have to do anything and it has a little spout on it and you can bottle your bottles from the milk plan. And so that's probably on the horizon for me. I may look into getting some grants for that sort of stuff. I don't know. I don't love the idea of doing that because I don't like the idea of them being in my business, but we'll see. I'm going to look into it just to see. And then I also may get a cream separator. Right now I separate by hand because I only have 3 gallons a day. It takes me 20 minutes. And I leave half of my cream line for my customers and I take half for my family because that's how much it takes weekly for us to have our creamer and our butter and our ice cream. And and that's the whole reason I got milk cows. So if I can't have enough cream from my milk cows to do what I need to do for our family, then I would definitely not sell milk anymore. So, but we leave, I mean, we leave a good inch and a half cream line so that, you know, because that's the main thing. You want to have some fat, even, we do it even in our drinking milk so that there's, but that's still plenty of fat. That's still plenty, plenty good for your drinking milk. So that's what we do. And the other thing you have to kind of think about is once your cow gets older, what are you going to do with your spent cows or your cull cows? And what we plan to do is send Tara to the processor. It does not come without pain. Every time I think about it, it makes me sick at my stomach. But I've had to sort of separate because I'm so attached to her. She was my first milk cow. She and I, you know, she trained me pretty much. And the thought of sending her to the processor hurts my heart. But it's something that has to be done. I don't want to give someone else my problem because unless somebody has a bull, because the only problem with her is that I can't get her bred. Other than that, you know, she's a great cow. So, you know, I just don't want to hand off my problems to someone else. And so she'll go to the freezer and then that will complete the circle. She will, you know, she's fed our family and will continue to feed our family. And that's sort of how that's going to play out. So it's tough. It's not fun. If you think of anything that you have questions about, anything that I haven't covered, again, I am not the milk cow guru. I do know a lot about my cows. I don't know everything about all cows. I don't know everything about other breeds of cows. I am pretty much a Jersey girl, except for my little Jersey Angus cross that's going to be our beef breeder and also milking cow. So that's really the only Angus, you know, the only thing outside of full-bred Jersey that I have any experience with. But, you know, if I don't know the answer, I know people, and so I can try to find you the best, most experienced opinion that I can get, because again, all of this is opinion. There's nothing that I'm saying that should be, you know, taken as gospel, that's for sure. But if there's anything that I can help with, or you decide you want to get a milk cow, feel free to reach out to me. You can shoot me an email at dawn@thegorhamhomestead.com, and I will get back to you. Also, if you have any ideas, anything that you want me to talk about, also shoot me an email at that. But with that, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed talking about milk cows because this is my jam. This is what gets me excited. I love talking about milk cows. But if you like the podcast, it'd be awesome if you could just subscribe, leave me a review. It helps other people to find our podcast, helps me to grow. You can find me at thegorhamhomestead.com. Some of our products and stuff is on there, and we ship to all over the United States. And you can also find me on all the socials at just the Gorham Homestead. Whatever you're doing today, I hope that you will remember to just, man, keep it real. See y'all.
My daddy was a guitar picker, playing all the local clubs. And my mama was a waitress, where they parked and maintained wheeler trucks. So we didn't have much money, times were kinda hard. Living in a trailer on the edge of Grandpa's farm.